You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. It is all hotting up now with the Frostfair Affair. We are up to Chapter 10, The Queen's Man. The carriage didn't stop until they reached Wistwaria Palace. It must have been only a few minutes. Court simply wasn't that large an island. But it felt like far too long. "Why didn't you heal him?" Thornbury demanded of Neame when he saw the state that Henry was in. He leaned over, casting a deep healing charm. Without pausing, he recast the illusion charm also, and tied the kerchief back in place, so that their wounded man no longer looked anything like the Duke of Storm. Furious and miserable, Neame removed her blood-soaked gloves and threw them at him. "Because I boiled my magic dry when a certain spellcracker fell in the river last night," she replied in the chilliest of tones. Thornbury looked thoroughly startled. "But I took you over the roof." "Yes, I was very brave about it, actually. When do I get to ask my questions? I've been saving them up." He gazed at her, helplessly. A palace footman approached, snapping to attention in response to a single word spoken by Mr. Thornbury. "Perseverance." Everything rolled forth rather quickly after that, and nothing about the bustling efficiency of the palace emergency protocol was conducive to further conversation. Being a member of the Seaborn family meant a great many more invitations to events at the palace than one could possibly accept. As far as Neame was concerned, even a few were far too many. She had been to Wistwaria Palace as a child more than once, as part of her mother's retinue. On one occasion, she and Metis and Henry were garbed in identical silk sailor suit outfits at the behest of her late aunt, the Duchess of Storm. Miss Mnemosyne Seaborn was invited to Wistwaria in her own right, not merely as an adjunct to her mamma, 6 years or so ago, for her presentation to the old queen upon coming out in society, and again 3 months later for the funeral of the old queen and subsequent coronation of young Queen Aud. It made for an awkward first season, juggling morning blacks and lilacs with tea parties and half the usual number of balls. Still, Neame only knew a few areas of the palace with any familiarity. The reception gardens, the Grand Crystal Hall, and the debutante gallery. Today, she was hurried into a gaping parlour hung with heavy curtains. There were so many portraits hung so close together in their giant gilded frames that there was no need for wallpaper. It was like being glared at by a kaleidoscope of postage stamps featuring someone else's grumpiest uncles. There was a full tea service, piping hot, porcelain cups with a pattern of cornflowers and poppies. She was alone. For the first time in her living memory, Neame did not fancy a cup of tea. She couldn't even bring herself to sit down. She watched the clock tick on the mantelpiece for more than half an hour. She was exhausted and ragged, with Henry's blood on her borrowed opera gown and boots that were starting to feel wet on the inside as well as out. Finally, the door swung open and Mr. Thornbury entered. He had changed his clothes, she noted sourly, fully buttoned up with a new cravat. If he had taken the time to bathe before he came to find her, she was going to crack that teapot over his head. "Are you hurt?" he asked, looking her over carefully. "It's not my blood." At the sharp tone in her voice, he relaxed, as if Neame being angry at him was a sure sign she was perfectly all right. Hadn't he learned yet that ladies could do and feel more than one thing at a time? "Henry's healing up fine," he informed her. "The palace physician is finishing up with him shortly." "So, You can answer some questions? Thornberry sagged as if he had been expecting this. Yes, we have time now. He reached for her hands, as if to clasp them both in his. She pulled away and sat stiffly on the ridiculously pretty couch, not even caring if she got blood all over it. The palace cleaning staff were probably bursting with spells for that sort of thing. Who is Henry? Thornberry sat opposite her. After a brief moment of awkwardness, when she failed to pour the tea despite his evident expectation, he reached for the pot himself and poured two cups. He's your cousin, the Duke of Storm. Don't toy with me. Some of the answers to your questions will be secrets I am not allowed to tell, Thornberry warned her. But given the events of today, there's a little more flexibility that might otherwise be the case. Henry is an agent of the Crown. So am I. Neem wasn't entirely sure what that meant. She said nothing and did not touch the cup of tea he poured for her. Somehow that unsettled Thornberry enough to keep talking. A good trick she must remember in future. He took a deep breath before he began and swallowed nearly half of his tea in one gulp. Do you remember asking me if I would take the Seaborn name when we married? Of course, Neem said stiffly. That was an easy decision, because Thornberry isn't a family name. My father chose it for me, to make sure we were never publicly connected. And your father is? Octavian Swift, Queen's consultant. He said it as if it was the heaviest, most tragic secret he had ever shared with anyone. I've never heard of him, said Neem. Few have. On paper, he's the dullest of Her Majesty's advisers, all paperwork and filing. In truth, he's the Queen's spymaster. He runs secret agents around the Teacup Isles and the continent, collecting information to keep the country safe. And you're one of these agents, Neem said quietly. You and Henry. All that travel you do, all those back-and-forth capers at the Duke of Storm, the parties and the social whirl, you were doing that in public and at the same time... Everyone knows Henry is the Queen's man, said Mr. Thornberry. It's the traditional role of the Duke of Storm when the monarch is unmarried. He speaks on her behalf, hosts parties for foreign visitors, that sort of thing. It's a remarkably good cover for his other job, especially as most people assume he's a nitwit. He's not even pretending that part, he added. Being ridiculously cheerful and blurting out random nonsense is all him. He just has a lot more going on under the surface than most people. You said his other job, but you mean your other job, she corrected, holding his gaze steadily. Both of you are agents of the Crown. Yes. He admitted it so easily as if he had not turned her entire world upside down. You told me I would be a scholar's wife. It came out more plaintive than Neem might have wished. She wanted so badly to be strong right now, strong and graceful and quietly furious. She had the furious part down, at least. Thornberry winced. I know I did. Perhaps you should tell me who I would really be marrying. Because the life you've described to me of occasional spellcracking interspersed with library research and happy domesticity does not really match with the life of a queen's agent or the son of a spymaster or whatever you are. She wanted to cry. She would hate herself if she started crying right now. Mr. Thornberry hesitated. I was not dishonest about the life I thought we would lead together, Neem. All this, I was supposed to be done with it by now. That was decided before I even met you. Henry chose to settle down, to start taking his title seriously, try to father a son. Hijinks and secret messages and stabbings on rooftops are for men with fewer personal responsibilities. Finding him a wife who wouldn't turn out to be an enemy agent was my last official task for the Crown. Our retirement was made official months ago. Neem's mind was all awhirl. Does Juno know all this? He told her about his past on their wedding night. As I intended to with you. She could tell from the hopeful look on his face that Thornbury thought this was a reasonable plan. After we were bound in matrimony, she noted sharply. After our fates were inextricably tied to those of our husbands. I know it's not fair, he conceded. I didn't expect to find you, to have someone like you in my life, and when I realised what we could have together, I was so relieved that my old career was behind me, that I didn't have to make a choice. It didn't feel like it was behind either of them right now. She still had Henry's blood on her gown. You can't turn it off, can you? Neem accused. If you see something that endangers the crown, you'll act, like you did last night, investigating the printer's tent, finding Savini's body. That wasn't for my benefit. It was because you noticed something out of place. If you come across something dangerous in future, you won't just leave it to the other agents of the crown. You will act. He hesitated, and she saw a world of excuses in his eyes. He was trying to think of the right words to convince her that this was a single one-off occurrence, that being a spymaster's son was something you could actually retire from. If he lied now, she could never trust him. Yes, said Thornbury, heavily. I will always act. Always. Neem understood him better now. She wasn't happy about it, but at least she had more information. If he had waited until their wedding night, how could Juno have possibly forgiven her own husband for this? Tell me about Savini, she said after a moment. Did you kill him? Mr. Thornbury choked on the dregs of his tea. Gods, no! Is that what you think of me? We've established that I don't know as much about you as I imagined, Neem snapped. You draw the line at assassination. It's not one of my special skills. Oh, how comforting. You should drink the tea, he blurted out, putting down his empty cup. Vervain and lemongrass. It'll help you recover your magic. Thank you, said Neem, her voice still sharp with anger. That was very thoughtful. She raised the cup, no longer hot, to her lips, and drank in small, vicious sips. It did make her feel better. Somehow that was the most infuriating thing of all. So who killed him? I don't know yet, but I intend to find out. Did it have something to do with my pamphlets? Her voice gave way a little. The business with the sordid cartoon of the Queen was bad enough, but she did not know how to process the idea that her portal campaign might have caused a man's death. Not exactly, said Thornbury. It was bad luck that you chose that particular printer. I didn't know myself about the connection until after you reported seeing Savini there, the day of the first snow. But if he commissioned that awful print and was killed in the printer's tent... Savini did not commission the print, nor release it. I don't think he had anything to do with the theft of your pamphlets either. Neem blinked. He didn't commission the print? But he said, Savini was good at saying things, my dear. He filled the air with words to distract people for suspecting his true purpose. That was his special skill. Perhaps he had satirical prints on the brain at the time. The truth is, Fenchurch the printer was Savini's informant. While it's possible that Fenchurch killed Savini and went to ground, it's far more likely that Fenchurch has been abducted by the people responsible for Savini's death. I'm missing something, said Neem, interested despite herself. Why don't you think Savini was the one behind the print? Because, said Thornbury, he was my colleague, another agent of the Crown. But he was an anti-royalist, quite the loudest anti-royalist in the city, according to Juno. Yes, said Thornbury. The best part was, he meant every word of it, hated the very idea of monarchy. That didn't stop him being loyal to the Queen. It's been rather useful to have agents in enemy camps. My father has made a specialty of placing his people in the most unexpected positions, and of turning those in unexpected positions over to our side. I'm not sure which way around it was with Savini, but he was the Queen's man, and he died in her service. He said it matter-of-factly, as if this was the normal way of things. Neame nodded, her mouth becoming thin. And now his wife is a widow, she said, very quietly. This was a fact that Mr. Thornberry could not refute. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. We have 3 chapters left of this novella, and I will see you next week.